Welcome to the City Council Study Session for Tuesday, September 8th, 2020. The item on our agenda relates to our budget update, and I'm going to turn it over to the City Manager.
Thank you, Your Honor. So tonight's discussion is a follow-up to the discussions we had in advance of adopting our budget on July 1. We know that COVID-19 has had a significant impact on our businesses and our local economy, and also they're having a significant impact on our city budget as well. Despite the budget balancing measures we put in place so we could adopt a balanced budget for July 1st, we're continuing to see declines in our revenues, and the need for additional recurring budget balancing measures are going to be necessary in order for the city to continue operating within our means. And so tonight, staff is going to present to you a proposed process to identify options for future council consideration on ways that we can reduce our budget and adjust our services in order to continue serving the community. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Kay Neese, who's finance director, to lead us through the presentation.
Thank you and good evening. I am joined tonight by Amanda Farthing, who is our Human Resources Director, who will be here to review the details of the Voluntary Separation Incentive Plan, or VSIP, that will be a part of tonight's discussion. I am going to share the presentation, so hold with me one moment. All right, so as a result of COVID-19, the city has experienced historic disruption of its economic activity. This includes local bars and restaurants operating at a reduced capacity, negative GDP growth, declines in travel, increases in unemployment, and the University of Illinois moving to all classes online in March of 2020 with a hybrid approach of in-person and online classes beginning in fall of 2020. As a result, the city has seen significant declines in its major revenues. For instance, in the month of May, sales tax revenue fell by approximately 24% compared to the same period last year. Due to the rapid changes in the economic environment, finance went month by month and projected revenues for all of fiscal year 2021. This chart shows the average decrease in projected revenues for fiscal year 2021 compared to what was anticipated prior to COVID-19. As you can see, the largest dollar decrease is within our sales tax revenue of around $5.3 million. This is due to an anticipated drop in sales tax revenue of around 15% and is the result of sales tax revenue being one of the largest revenue sources for the city. Also included as decreases in major revenue are income taxes with a 10% or around $800,000 decrease in revenue. The food and beverage tax revenue with a drop of around 27% or $2.4 million. Hotel motel tax with a drop of around 43% or $1.5 million. Video gaming tax with a decrease of around 40% or $300,000. Motor fuel tax with a decrease of around 14% or $600,000. And court and municipal fines with a decrease of around 25% or $188,000. The total anticipated decrease in revenues is around $11.2 million. And one thing I want to emphasize is that these numbers are still very preliminary and likely to fluctuate over the course of the year, particularly as many of our major revenues have had their due dates changed and delayed, complicating the ability to get an accurate revenue outlook. The city's two major financial policies that we always budget in accordance with is first of all, our policy that recurring expenditures be budgeted at 98.5% of recurring revenues, and our policy of maintaining a 10% unassigned fund balance reserve. These policies have helped the city to build and maintain healthy fund balances that can be relied upon in the current economic crisis. Due to the rapid economic decline, these reserves were utilized in fiscal year 2020-21 to pass a budget that was balanced, but not within the boundaries of our recurring revenue policy. The city's reserves provided an immediate buffer to allow council time to make thoughtful decisions around additional budget reductions during this tier two budget process. So this chart shows the amount of the budget gap that needs to be closed to meet the city's financial policy of budgeting recurring expenditures at 98.5% of recurring revenues. This amount is around $5.3 million in fiscal year 2020-21. And to give a sense of scale, it represents about 6% of general fund expenditures. Without expenditure reductions, the city will also start to dip into its reserved fund balances to the tune of around $1.5 million by the end of the current fiscal year. The amount of this budget gap is smaller than the fall in revenue that I had talked about on the earlier slide. This is due to the city already reducing its budget by about $2.9 million back in the spring when the fiscal year 2020-21 budget was passed in June. Included in those reductions are reductions to our capital improvement fund, reductions to our vehicle replacement fund, reductions in salary and benefit costs by holding current vacant positions open, reductions in personnel costs by unfunding the pay for performance program, and by keeping salaries flat for city managers and department heads, as well as reductions in the economic development budget. As part of this tier two process, these budget reductions will also need to be evaluated to determine whether or not they can be extended or made permanent. Additional budget measures on top of those already taken will be needed. Given the size of the shortfall, the administration recommends that as many budget reductions be taken as quickly as possible. The administration recommends generating savings ideas for council consideration well in excess of the $5.3 million currently needed. This will provide a variety of options for council to consider, in particular because these decisions will impact future city services, residents, and employees. During the last recession, the city reduced staffing levels and expenditures, but did not reduce services. In the year since, the city has increased services, but made only a handful of staff increases. As a result, any reductions to budget will need to include reductions to services. The administration proposes pursuing the following saving strategies in order to generate savings ideas. First of all, asking city departments to identify about 15% of their department budgets as savings ideas. Generating about $2 million in savings ideas related to capital improvements. Exploring additional organizational-wide cost-saving strategies, such as evaluating the cost of health insurance, as well as compensation and benefits. Meeting with the leadership of all city bargaining units to obtain employee input and ideas on how to modify or reduce city services to achieve savings. And then establishing a process to solicit ideas from individual employees on how to modify or reduce city services to achieve savings. And finally, recommending the adoption of a voluntary incentive separation program, or VSIP, in order to reduce the city's workflow and related personnel expenditures. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Amanda Farthing, the city's Human Resources Director, who will provide additional details on the VSIP program.
Good evening. Thank you, Kay. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about the VSIP, or the Voluntary Separation Incentive Program, that we're proposing. So a VSIP is a tool that we can use to encourage expedited reductions in the workforce by providing an incentive for employees to voluntarily separate from employment within a certain period of time. So as Kay's mentioned, significant reductions in personnel costs are a necessary part of this budget reduction process. And these reductions will be needed quickly, ideally within the current fiscal year. A VSIP program will create multiple vacant positions in a relatively short period of time, which will allow departments to look at the savings that could be achieved by eliminating or reorganizing those vacant positions. And then we would balance that with the demands for city services in order to restructure our service delivery to achieve significant budget savings. So unlike other voluntary separation programs, the city's VSIP is not primarily designed simply to replace higher paid workers with lower paid workers, as you might hear is a frequent strategy in the private sector. The goal of this VSIP is to quickly make recurring reductions in the workforce in order to significantly reduce personnel costs. The VSIP is a flexible, fully customized program that gives employees the ability to be active participants in the process, which should help to maintain a more positive organizational culture. The program is completely voluntary, and employees who choose to apply for the incentive will be allowed to select their own desired separation date, so long as it's prior to December 31st of 2021. So looking at the individuals who would be eligible to apply for this program, most regular employees will be eligible. That would include some public safety personnel as well as department heads. However, certain groups of positions will not be eligible to apply for the proposed VSIP. These would include all the positions in the FOP, the Police Bargaining Unit, as well as all positions in the IAFF or the Fire Bargaining Unit, with the exception of Deputy Fire Marshals. Those are, Deputy Fire Marshals are a position classification that are covered under the IAFF labor agreement, but they don't serve in fire suppression roles. So those individuals would be eligible for the VSIP program. Library employees would also not be eligible under the city's VSIP program, since the library personnel policies are set by the library board. And similarly, positions at MetCAD are not currently included in the city's VSIP program, although inclusion of MetCAD employees could be considered with the approval of the MetCAD policy board. Even so, should the MetCAD Policy Board elect to join in the city's VSIP program, staff would still not recommend that TCs or telecommunicator one or two positions be included due to the critical public safety role that those positions serve. So the VSIP is an incentive program. To encourage employees to apply for the program, we propose two tiers or levels of incentives to be offered. The first tier would apply to individuals who agree to separate from city employment prior to July 1st of 2021. This payment tier would be calculated as 2 weeks of pay for every complete year of city service that the employee has as of October 1st of 2020. So for full-time employees, this would be calculated by taking the employee's regular rate of pay as it is in place on October 1st, multiplying that by 80 hours, which is a full-time 2 weeks worth of pay, and then multiplying that by the number of years of complete service that they have. There would be a minimum as well as a maximum threshold for the incentive amount. So we propose the minimum payment to be $15,000, and the maximum payment would be $60,000. So that's the calculation for full-time employees. For part-time employees, the method would be the same. The calculation method would be the same, except it would then be prorated based on the number of hours the employee normally is scheduled to work. And the minimum and maximum thresholds would be prorated accordingly as well. So that's the first tier of incentive payments. So those are folks who will agree to separate prior to July 1. The second tier of incentive amounts would apply to individuals who elect to separate from employment between July 1 and December 31 of 2021. And the incentive payment in that tier would be calculated essentially as half of the amount that would be calculated using the higher tiers formula. So it's still 2 weeks of pay for every complete year of service and then divided by two. This is obviously designed to encourage employees to separate from employment sooner rather than later. So the VSIP process, this slide will show the seven steps in the VSIP process. I'm going to walk through each one briefly. First, for eligible employees, they must apply for the incentive. So there will be an application form, but again, this is a voluntary process. So an employee must apply. We anticipate that applications would be accepted as soon as council gives staff direction to implement the program. And we projected the deadline for all applications should be submitted by mid-October. For each application that's received, staff in the finance department will calculate the potential amount of savings that could be achieved, as well as the one-time cost of the incentive payment for that person's position. And then there'll be a step for department review. So departments will then take a look at the application and consider how the VSIP applicant's position could either be eliminated in order to achieve recurring budget savings on its own, or could be part of a restructuring or reorganization of work so that savings could be achieved by reducing some other related position. So in both of those cases, the emphasis of the department's review will be on the service changes that may be needed in order to support the proposed position elimination. Only in the case where the department cannot reasonably develop a plan that would result in recurring cost savings from the general fund would the VSIP application not be recommended for approval. So we anticipate approving most, if not all, of the applications we receive. Once a VSIP application and the department reorganization plans have been reviewed, staff will update the council on the proposed changes in services that are recommended, along with the recommended budget and staffing reductions to council during a study session in early December. VSIP applications would then be approved consistent with the direction given by council on the service and staffing reductions. After a VSIP application is approved, the employee would be asked to enter into a separation agreement that spells out the terms of the separation as well as the incentive payment. An employee's application may be revoked by the employee up until that separation agreement is signed, but at that point, it would be binding and the employee would need to leave employment on the agreed upon date. Like any other voluntary separation, an employee who leaves employment through the VSIP program would not have any rights to continued or future employment. It is a voluntary separation after all. It's recommended as part of this program that an employee who leaves with a VSIP payment cannot be rehired into the same position from which they separated for a period of 3 years. However, if an employee who separates with a VSIP applies for a different position at the city through the normal recruitment process, they would be considered in the same way as any other external applicant. A voluntary separation incentive program will have significant impact on staffing levels across nearly all departments. The estimated number of positions that would be reduced through a VSIP is approximately 15 to 25 or more, depending on the number of applications received. Once all of the service and staffing and budget reductions are finalized, council will be asked to formally adopt these changes through an amendment to both the city's annual budget as well as the position control report in the salary and staffing ordinance. So that's the VSIP process. I will now turn it back over to Kay to talk about this and other next steps.
All right, thank you, Amanda. So the next step is to bring back to council for consideration a council bill to adopt the VSIP program. And because, as Amanda and myself had both mentioned, there's a need to move quickly with this, we are actually recommending bringing this back as early as September 15th. And then the VSIP application period would begin September 16th and continue through October 15th. At the same time, in the month of September, the administration will be initiating meetings with various employee bargaining and non-bargaining groups in order to be able to provide updates throughout the process. Meanwhile, the departments will begin to generate savings options. Then in December, both an updated forecast as well as saving options with the related service impacts will be presented for council consideration. Finally, in January, staff will bring back for amendment the fiscal year 2020-21 budget. So we do have a poll question tonight, which is seeking council direction to proceed with the recommended next steps to develop a proposed budget balancing measures for future council consideration and to direct staff to bring forward an ordinance establishing a voluntary separation incentive program. So at this point, I will turn it back over to council for comment and questions.
Are there any technical questions? Councilmember Kyles.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just for public conversation or awareness, Kay, what would be the impact of using our reserves instead of doing any cuts, using our reserves to fulfill these budget gaps?
So the impact there would be that we would very quickly end up using up all of those reserves. So what we're projecting is that if no additional expenditure reductions are taken, we would start to dip below our 10% fund balance policy by about $1.5 million by the end of this fiscal year. by the end of the next fiscal year, we would likely have used up basically all of our fund balance. And then we would start to get into a deficit position with the general fund. So just because of how sharply these revenues have fallen and how quickly they have fallen, we are already utilizing some of these reserves. But if we don't start taking steps quickly and taking steps now, we will very quickly use up all of those reserves and be left with deficit funding, which is not a position I think anybody would want to be in.
With staff, thank you, Rob. With staff reductions, obviously services are impacted. What type of ideas are, or if any, have been discussed to deal with some of the social issues and that we are dealing with up to this point?
So at this point, we've really been focused more on generating savings ideas, but with the idea that these ideas that we are generating, as I mentioned, are well in excess of the amount that we actually need to reduce at this point. This way, by having savings ideas above and beyond what we need, it gives us an opportunity to consider exactly what services that we may want to reduce during this time period, as well as if there's any additional services that we may want to consider.
Councilmember Gladney.
Thank you. Yeah, I just have a couple questions. So Finance Director Neese, the next step slide you showed may kind of answer some of this, but I just was a little confused. So the timeline of all this, so from when, let's say, an employee would submit an application for voluntary separation to the point where they enter into the separation agreement, what does that look like? And I noticed that we have a timetable set up for October of this year, but we also say that the more generous portion of this separation package goes until July, and then that after that it goes and cuts in half and goes until December of next year. So what can you just explain the timeline we're looking at for this?
Hey, do you want me to take that one as far as the VSIP?
Sure.
Okay. So timeline wise, we would begin accepting applications mid-September. The deadline to receive all the applications would be mid-October. So it's mid-October when we know the universe of people who have asked to be a part of this program. Within their application, the employee is going to tell us what date they want to separate from employment. And that could be any time between middle of October and December 31st of next year. So they can pick the date and it will be up to them to decide when it's going to be. So they get almost a whole year to actually leave employment. But that's what they specify in their application. And then we spend the time between middle of October to basically somewhere in the middle of November, taking a look at all those applications and saying, how could we make these work? If we could accept this application, how would we need to restructure and reorganize services in order to deal or in order to get by without a position in that either that vacancy or a different vacancy? How can we reorganize to make that work? After we make those decisions and we come to you and explain what the service changes would be, then we make the decision about eliminating positions and we look at separation agreements being executed in, let's say, early December. So the agreements are executed, meaning they're signed, but the separation doesn't have to happen until that date comes around. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
But let's say that they've signed the separation agreement, but their separation date is not for like another 6 months. If I understood what you said earlier, during that 6 month period, there is no going back, correct? On that.
Right. Once they have signed the separation agreement, we are now moving forward with plans to eliminate that position from the budget on the date that they've elected to separate.
Okay. Another question I have is, this is maybe for the edification of the public, but are we for all intent and purposes, we're in the middle of a hiring freeze, correct? So we're not looking to add on positions at this time.
That's correct.
Oh, the opposite. We're doing the opposite. Okay. I just wanted to... Yeah. So it's been the talk about reduction of services has been brought up tonight a few times. So is there any way, are there any specifics that are being looked at, or what might that reduction in services impact look like for the public?
At this point, there's no specifics necessarily being discussed. It's really more about trying to talk to the departments and gather information on those specifics to be able to bring that forward in order to be able to talk about that through council and sort of beginning that process of generating those ideas.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Pianfetti.
Thank you. I had a couple of questions as well. I know it was mentioned that it was anticipated maybe 15 to 25 might be the number that was looked at for the VSIP, that might be what people might take advantage of it. But is there an upper end where there may be too many people that take advantage of it? Has that come under discussion of where we might stretch ourselves too thin? And if so, what measures might be in place if you have to turn down somebody that would like to take a voluntary separation, but you have to look at them and say, we're sorry, but we're rejecting your application?
Sure. I can feel that one as well. So I'll answer that a couple of different ways. The first way is to say how I think Kay answered this very early in our discussions about this months ago, which is that there is enough savings that needs to be found that chances are good that almost all applications, if not all, could be accepted and we'd still have more cuts to make. So I think that's the way we're looking at it going in. But having said that, there may be a circumstance that comes up that we may have to disapprove an application. So for example, if we have multiple applications from individuals who are in the same position classification. So example I like to use is, let's say, arborists. We have a cadre of arborists, and if all of them put in an application for a VSIP, it would be unlikely that it would be in the city's best interest to accept all of those. I'm not saying it's not possible. We could perhaps reorganize, but it would be difficult to transfer someone in to that position and whatnot. So if we have multiple applications from employees in the same position classification and we have to decide which ones we're not going to take, what we would propose is to use seniority as the selection process there. But I do believe that that official decision would be part of our conversations with the bargaining unit if that were a bargaining unit position. So that would kind of be the general process. And then the other thing is the application has to produce savings. That's the purpose of the program. So our intention is to be as creative and think outside the box as far as we can to ensure that every application can be reorganized in a way that we can accept it. There has to be some way that we can restructure and reallocate work so that that application could be accepted and a vacancy is guaranteed to exist that we could eliminate. But if there were a circumstance where it simply can't be done, for example, if it's a position out of the parking fund, well, we'd have to discuss how that would actually impact savings in the general fund, and we'd have to reshuffle some things. If it couldn't be done, that's a feature of the program. Not all applications will be approved. It's not an entitlement. So that should be clear to employees who apply.
Great, thank you so much.
Sure. Councilmember Stock, and then we got back.
Yeah, I've got a few. Kay, can you talk a little bit about economic predictions? This is obviously COVID related. Let's say, for example, there's a vaccine that comes out after the first of the year. Are we still predicting that these revenues are going to stay down for an extended period of time? I feel like, are we chasing the eight ball on by the time people are leaving these positions? It's a U-shaped recovery and we're already heading back up anyway?
What I would say is this is part of the reason why when we looked at revenues, we looked at it really on a month-by-month basis. So I'd mentioned, sales tax revenue for the month of May was down about 24%. Well, that was the month of May. What we are predicting is that it will get better in the months of June and July and August, as you know, the shutdown orders started easing. And we also did still predict that it would continue to get better even in the spring months, just, you know, hoping that things would continue to ease up and get better as far as revenue is concerned. But that being said, the longer that this goes on, the higher the unemployment numbers get, the longer this all sorts of all of the economic impacts are being felt, the more likely it is that it's not a quick V-shaped recovery, that it is a longer recovery time period. And so I think that it's good to plan for that. But it is something that we're going to be continuously looking at. You know, I always say that, you know, if I could predict exactly how COVID was going to impact the economy for the next 9 months, you know, I would be probably somewhere like on Wall Street making millions of dollars. But really, so what we're trying to do is trying to take our best estimates on where we think things are going to be, but continuously updating all of our revenue projections and all of our numbers. And that's part of why when we come back in December, we'll be providing additional forecasts at that time.
Okay. So are the numbers you gave us on the percent drop and so forth, the food and beverage tax is up to what, June? Is that where that number is?
So what is shown in that table is what that average reduction is. And so what that was looking at was sort of our what we were anticipating our averages to be. And what we were seeing is that over time, food and beverage is one that's probably being hit the hardest right now. Is what we're seeing based on our projections. And that's just because of, you know, the fact that restaurants are still operating at limited capacity. And there's also the question of during the winter months, you know, what will happen with some of those, with some of that outdoor seating.
Okay. But for your averages though, what numbers did you use for your average? Up to June or with July?
With it would include both June and July, because June gets collected in July. So those averages did include starting in June and going all the way through June of 2020 and going all the way through then May of 2021.
Okay, but it doesn't have, I guess my question is, if I remember correctly from the last time we talked about this, July food and bev tax was not in the calculation. Is that, which is when restaurants started to reopen again?
So we did include an increase in anticipated revenue in food and beverage in the month of July, and then going forward as things started to reopen.
Okay, perfect. And then how much do we actually have in reserves? I've asked that question. I've been asked that question. We've been putting, I feel like that's like our savings account that we've been putting money away in for years. So I feel like this is when, you know, if my roof caved in, I wouldn't sell my lawnmower and sell my car, because that's why I've been saving money.
Right. So what we are projecting is that if we make no additional changes in expenditures by the end of fiscal year 21, we would have reserves still in place of around $6.7
million. Okay. But what are they today?
So today they would be right around $12 million is what they were as of, not as of today, but as of July 1 of 2020.
Okay. And then I now, Amanda, I think you're probably on now. You're off the hook. Okay. Amanda, for the buyout, does that go on to their salary then? Or in other words, is that going to impact their pensions? Is that going to be credible earnings?
So I know it's taxable earnings. Kay, actually, I might defer to you to tell me whether it is pensionable. Sorry.
It depends on, so for IMRF, it is pensionable, but I'm not sure if for police and fire, I would need to double check on that. If it would.
But I think the question is, so when we're saying pensionable, it means that this payment is subject to having pension deducted from it. The question I think is, if we give somebody a $30,000 payout, does their final salary for calculation of their forever pension go up by $30,000? And the answer to that question is no, it's not going to be treated as their final salary. It is a separate one-time payment.
That's correct. And that's particularly true for IMRF that has systems in place to purposely exclude those types of things.
Okay. That's really where I was going with that. So yeah, okay. That's exactly, because I know TRS is the same way where they've got caps. So that's what I was checking on. And then could you walk me through a little bit one more time about why we are allowing some police and fire to go with the buyout and some police and fire not to get the buyout?
Sure. So I'll start with police. There are no positions in the FOP or the sworn officer. No, I keep saying it that way. In the FOP bargaining unit, command staff that is in the non-bargaining unit may be eligible. And the reason for that is, you know, obviously the purpose of this program is to create vacancies that can result in elimination of positions. And we're attempting to eliminate positions that are vacant rather than filled, right? That's the point of doing this, to encourage vacating a position. In the police officer position classification, we already have a significant number of vacant positions. If we were considering taking some of our budget savings or budget reductions by eliminating vacant police officer positions, we don't need to encourage anybody to leave to do that. We've already got vacant FOP positions to cut. So it doesn't provide, there isn't really a value in incentivizing further attrition out of that position. Kind of similar argument on IAFF, except that the bargaining unit there, we have deputy fire marshals that would be included, and that's just a feature of their position. But we're also looking at fire suppression staff. You know, we've gone through in recent times significant effort to increase staffing, and because of their kind of the way that they staff their trucks, as you recall, when council added FTE to the fire department, it was to add a body to a truck. I don't think that we're looking to cut that back any further. That would be what was necessary. If we were going to take cuts out of the IAFF position classification, it would require that level of service, that level of reduction. And the other thing is, if you're to eliminate, let's say, if you were attempting to eliminate a position at the captain rank, because of the way promotions work in the fire department, you have to fill whatever position you have through promotion. So you're gonna have to fill a captain, or you have to fill a lieutenant from a rank below. So our cuts would all be at the firefighter level, which would be difficult to sustain.
So what if then, and go through this, may kick to you, I don't know. What if half of the police command or the fire command people take advantage of the deal? We're not going to move people up. We're going to have battalion chiefs empty.
Well, I think that's part of what the evaluation process is. And, you know, you're asking specifically about police and fire, but this is going to be the evaluation process for anybody who applies for a VSIP. I can tell you, for example, when we went through this during the economic downturn last time, we went from 3 deputy chiefs in police down to 2 deputy chiefs in police. We eliminated the position. We did not promote somebody into it and promote everybody up and then take the savings on the front line. We eliminated the higher cost administrative position. So I suspect that that's going to be how we evaluate everything. Our first tool, when somebody says, I'm interested in a VSIP, our first thing is going to be, can we just eliminate that position? And then if we cannot eliminate that position, then we're going to ask ourselves, okay, well, then if we keep that position and somebody is promoted into it, can we eliminate that position? Or can we completely get rid of a position and create a different restructuring of work in a different classification that achieves the savings? But that's going to be what we do across all departments, not just in police and fire.
Okay. You done?
I'm done.
Councilmember Beck.
Thank you. Okay, so my first question actually has to do with the additional steps that we're going to be taking. I know that the VSIP program is really of our primary conversation tonight, but I'm wondering if you can give us an idea when we will expect to see some of the additional issues that will be attended to. For example, I'm looking specifically at the 15% reductions in different departments. When can we anticipate having those reviews done?
So those we anticipate having those reviews done around the end of November, and then that will be part of what we bring back to council for study session in early December. So those savings ID generations are actually due back from departments towards the end of October. And then in the month of November, that's really where we're going to be working through all of those savings ideas and suggestions, looking at, you know, the VSIP applications and working through much of that, and then bringing back to council in that December time period, the savings ideas and things of that nature for council discussion.
So that'll be in concert then with the VSIP. So they'll have an opportunity to look at the impact of those as well in that context. Okay.
Yes.
My second question is, have you had any conversations beyond the sort of general announcement of this, of changes with bargaining units at all?
We've been talking about this in a general sense for months. So it's been a topic of conversation since COVID started. We have not held any formal discussions with them on this topic alone. We needed your input before we shared details of the program with the bargaining units. But we do have the first round of bargaining unit discussions on the schedule now, and we plan to have kind of pre-scheduled and multiple conversations on the calendars throughout this process with each of the bargaining units.
Do you anticipate that you'll have any requests for bargaining to open bargaining on, or demands of bargaining for this?
For the VSIP specifically, or for budget reductions generally?
For VSIP specifically.
I don't anticipate that. Again, it's a voluntary separation program, so there's limited things that are really bargaining topics within that program. An employee is free to separate from service anytime they want to, but I do expect that there should be significant conversations with the unions around our budget approach generally with regard to future salaries and the restructuring and reorganization of work. It's really the impact of the VSIP program that's probably more a topic of discussion than the program itself.
Do you think that there's going to be a question of fairness at all?
In what way?
So that, I do think, so related to things like the impact, or for example, the question that was posed earlier about what if we get multiple people all in the same classification applying for a VSIP, and how do we decide? That may be something that we would want to have a discussion with the union and possibly enter into memorandums of understanding so that there is clarity around the process and there's kind of agreement there. So we can still have conversations about impact and discussions. If anything crosses into formal bargaining, things that really impact contractual language, obviously we would come to council in closed session to get direction from council on anything that would be official bargaining. But the point of us having conversations is to identify those topics and make sure that early on we can separate what is just general good conversations with the workforce from things that might require specific dialogue around an MOU or things that might be actually collective bargaining.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, that sounds great. So one of the things, though, that specifically kind of, as we've been talking today, that kind of came to mind was our need to be aware of the fact that we may have people that have the same classification within a bargaining unit, and how that decision is made. That's the question of fairness. And so that will be of concern, I am sure. So
So
I think that that's something that should be anticipated, and be ready to address that concern.
Yeah, absolutely. We would welcome the conversation with the union about how to make that decision. That is certainly squarely within the wheelhouse of those conversations.
Okay, that's all my questions.
Anyone else? Councilmember Bruno.
A couple of questions. I think it's maybe human nature that we would like to get through the economic impact of the pandemic without suffering any pain. but I'd like to put some of these things in perspective. The question was asked about what are our financial reserves right now? And Kay, I think you mentioned that they were about $12 million. Can you put that in terms, you know, in a household setting, people might say, how many months worth of your household income do you have in the savings account? Do you have a month's worth? Do you have 2 months worth? Do you have a year's worth of what your family spends in a, you know, in reserves? How, where does $12 million fit into the annual amount of money the city goes through? Is that a week's worth, a month's worth, a quarter's worth?
So that would be about 6 to 8 weeks worth of expenditures is about what those, about what $12 million in reserves gets us.
Okay. So theoretically, if the spigot were shut off, we would go from $12 million in reserves to zero in reserves in 6 to 8 weeks.
Yes.
The other question I have for you in terms of trying to get through the economic impact of the pandemic without any reduction in city services or staffing, how much would we have to raise our heretofore fairly even real estate tax assessment? How much would we have to raise, for instance, our real estate tax in order not to have any reduction in services or staffing in light of the reduced income from the pandemic?
So for our real estate taxes, it's currently at a rate of 1.3152. If we raise that to 1.5, that generates about 3.5 million. Just trying to do the math kind of off the top of my head.
20% increase?
We would likely be, need to raise it by about 1 point to about 1.65. Which would be
20% increase, 30%
yeah, about
increase
that.
In real estate taxes.
About
so if the public says, if the public says, I don't want to see the city suffer at all, then we could do that if they all just allow us to raise their real estate taxes by 20% this year.
Yeah, that would be, you know, an alternative as well.
That's my question. Thanks. Yep.
Anyone else? Councilmember Stack.
Sorry, I meant to do this one earlier. I just want to make sure I'm clear. So with the amount of cuts that departments are asked to make and staffing and so on and so forth, is the goal of that just to get us to break even, or are we still trying to do the 10% in reserves? In other words, are we trying to save money while we cut money, or is this just to kind of keep us on an even keel?
So what this is trying to do is get us to a point where in not even in the current fiscal year that we're in, fiscal year 21, but with our by our the end of our next fiscal year, get us to a point where we are at the very least balanced and working towards getting back to within our policies. And then looking to get us fully back within all of our policies by the following fiscal year 23. So really trying to ease this back, but also within there trying to account for the fact that, you know, hopefully we will start to see some of that recovery in subsequent fiscal years. But what we're really trying to get is getting back to being balanced by next fiscal year and relying on some of our reserves in the meantime, and then trying to get back to within all of our policies by fiscal year 23. And that would include our 10% fund balance reserve policy.
City Manager.
I do want to make a clarification so that people are clear that when we're asking departments to come up with savings ideas of 15% of their budget, that is not the same as us saying that every department's budget will be cut by 15%. We are not recommending across the board cuts because cuts equate to services, and we think that the city council needs to set the priorities of which services are reduced and modified. Across the board tends to become an imbalanced way of making service choices. So we're asking for 15%, like Kay indicated, as ideas, well in excess of what we really need so that you guys can evaluate your options and your choices. But in reality, when you actually adopt an amended budget, the reductions in various departments may be very different depending on the service priorities that you identify. And there may be some departments that have much less of a percentage cut and others that may take more. In the last economic downturn, the majority of the cuts were borne by administrative departments and the public works department. It was not an equal across the board cut because that is the decisions that were made at that time.
Councilmember Stack.
Dorothy, kind of following up on that. What is that? You probably said this, I just was flipping and I couldn't find it quick. What's that 15% equal to roughly, or Kay, whoever?
Kay, you have the number. The 15%, it's like seven.
So that's about 7.8 million. And then we're looking for possible savings and capital improvements of around 2 million. So that gets us close to about 10 million, almost twice of what our actual current budget gap is. And the idea behind that is, like Dorothy said, to be able to have ideas and options and things like that, to be able to go through and choose from and determine the best path forward.
Thank you.
Anyone else? All right, so we're going to the audience. If there is anyone who wishes to address the City Council regarding this issue, please raise your hand. Deputy Mayor Bruno will call on you. And you have 5 minutes to speak. Please state your name and city of residence. Each person will have one opportunity to speak.
Madam Mayor, I'm going to open the microphone for Brian Dunn. 7:51 p.m.
Hello, my name is Brian Dunn. I live in Champaign, Illinois. Sure you guys kind of know what I'm going to say, but I think that when we are administering these cuts, we need to think not only about, what kind of pain it's going to cause, but who is going to cause pain to, because, you know, we want to get through this without any pain. Of course, that's ideal, but, you know, cuts are going to affect someone who's a single mother a lot more than it's going to affect someone like Tom Bruno. So I think that, you know, when we're talking about the pain that the city's going to feel, we really need to think about who's going to be feeling this pain. And also, you know, I can think of one department that's huge, that's bloated. We're in unprecedented times. This is a pandemic. We need to think with imagination. We need to think radically, and we need to think critically. And I think that especially in this time, the police department is unable to be critical of themselves. They have established a cult around themselves. You can see it in these Blue Lives Matter rallies, which are completely nonsensical. The most dangerous thing to active duty police officers in the nation right now is COVID. And then you see these, you know, big things where all these hundreds of people aren't even wearing masks. And so obviously they don't care about the lives of the blue lives or whatever, you know, they just care about the social structure and the oppression that they uphold. I think that we need to think about where we need police, how often do we need them on our streets, and, you know, behind COVID, it's traffic accidents, it's getting struck by vehicles. You know, we need to get police off the street for their safety, for the community's safety, to better organize and better manage our community. Talking about cutting administrators, I think that we can just slim down this police department. Free up a lot of the budget. Of course, cuts will have to be made elsewhere, but I think that, you know, this is an unprecedented time in history. I think that it would be admirable of all of you to make unprecedented moves at this time. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, I'm going to open the microphone for Alan Axelrod.
Thanks, Tom Bruno. Can you hear me? This is a different device than I've previously used.
Yes.
Thank you. So on this issue,
Mr. Axelrod, please state your name and your city of residence.
Thank you. My name is Alan Axelrod. I live in Urbana. I wanted to highlight that When we're talking about these cuts, yes, as the discussion has focused on, there are some at-will positions that you have plenty of leeway in terms of actually being able to reduce spending in these trying times. I also wanted to highlight, especially when it comes to the calls for police reform and the effect that the police have on the impact the police have on the overall budget, is that y'all have nearly, if not more, than 100 police officers on staff. I would be absolutely shocked if none of them have met their retirement guidelines as outlined in their contract. And I would suggest that in addition to looking at the at-will employees when considering what sort of reductions can be achieved, that one also looks at the seniority of the officers and the retirement guidelines and see how many officers actually met that criteria and ask them whether or not they would be willing to retire in service to the city of Champaign. This will help in a couple different ways. It will help with the percentage of the budget that is allocated towards their pensions each year, because that's a function of the number of officers that you have on staff pursuant to the contract. And it would also be an olive branch to a very strained community. The people who were mass arrested on May 31st had their court dates today, some of them. So this is an ongoing set of very traumatic things that are going on in the community while you all are also having this budget crisis. And I think that there can be some synergy in how you handle it. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, there are no other hands raised for this. Well, now there is. I'll open the microphone for Bo Barber, 7:56 p.m.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me on. I thought I'd press the raised hand, but I guess not. Until you said that, I was like, oh no. So with this budget crisis,
Mr. Barber, please state your name and city of residence.
Sorry. My name is Bo Barber. City of residence is Ogden, Illinois. So with this, budget, you know, we have a lot of people. Some of the highest paid employees are in the police office. Anthony Cobb is making well over $150,000. People in the city manager, city attorney. I mean, y'all are making a hell of money. But you want to know what? I think just overall, the thing that we need to cut is the police budget, because it's a bloating budget over the years. And with all the other problems that we have in the community, we need to invest in the community in order to help it grow and also, you know, fiscally survive during this pandemic. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, I see no other hands raised.
Okay, is there any council comment? Councilmember Bruno?
Yeah, I think we're on the right track here with looking at ways that we can dramatically and quickly rein in city spending. It is always an alternative that we can simply leave city spending at its current levels and try to raise revenue to match it. I think the public would like to have, sometimes I think some members of the public would like to have no city services ever reduced and no city revenues ever raised, but that's an unworkable combination. And eventually we have to face reality. I believe if we could communicate what we know to members of our community about our choices, that the overwhelming amount of them would say, I can't handle a 20% real estate tax raise right now, as well as I could handle a reduction in city staffing, I'll opt for the reduction in city staffing. I think that's consistent with, by and large, what the public would like. Increasing real estate taxes affects everybody, including renters who have a increased cost of housing when real estate taxes are the way the city generates its revenue. And $12 million reserve may sound like a lot, but 6 to 8 weeks doesn't sound like that much to me. And I don't think we can afford to let that cushion go away. So I think we're on the right track, and I'll support these proposals and continue to look for other ways that we can try to deal with this emergency.
Councilmember Kim Fetty.
I wanted to say that I was supportive of these proposals as well. I think that a lot of work has gone into this and the circumstances, they're not ideal. And so to be able to look at how we can maneuver in a situation where we all would rather be eating in restaurants, shopping in stores, and generating the revenue as we typically do. But as has been said, these times are different. They're challenging us. And so to look at a proposal in which we feel like we are giving city staff an opportunity to make some decisions and to thoughtfully look at services and how we may be able to reduce them as best we can as a council and as a community, look at what would work best. I feel comfortable with that. I agree with Councilmember Bruno. I think the last thing I would ever want to do is a 20% tax increase. Certainly not for the residents of my district or any member of the city of Champaign. I don't think we would want to see that increase. So I would like to say that for everybody that worked on these proposals this evening, there was a lot of thoughtful and a lot of good work that went into it. And I know that there's a lot more that would be done. And I know a lot of city staff has already started to think about creative ways of maybe generating different ways of doing work, different ways of bringing ideas to the table. And that gives me hope. And so I look forward to continued conversations and thank you. And I will be supporting them this evening or I will be supporting moving them forward this evening.
Councilmember Beck.
So this is just the beginning really of our process. And I think that that should be noted that I think we're on our right path, as Councilmember Bruno said. I think we're on the right path. We're doing what's fiscally responsible. It's what we need to do for our community in order to maintain its health. But we have a lot of really difficult decisions to make. And there's some hard decisions about what kinds of services our citizens value the most that we need to make some decisions about. And so these are the things that I'm hoping to hear from people to understand what it is that people value from the city. Clearly, the city does a lot of things that are sort of unnoticed many times because we don't notice when the street sweepers come down our street and cleaned out the drains in our neighborhood like they did today right before the storm. We don't notice when the arborist has come through the neighborhood to make sure that the trees in your neighborhood are healthy and notes which trees may need to be removed in the coming year. Those are things that we don't see on a day-to-day basis, but they're things that constantly happen, and they certainly are things that we will have to consider going forward. And they make a difference to our community. But there are things that we are going to have to decide whether or not that we can sustain those over the next few years. So I would ask for citizens to please be active in thinking and commenting about what it is that you find to be the most valuable services in our community. And I look forward to those conversations. But mostly, I hope that people will understand that there will have to be reductions. We cannot maintain the things, all the things that we want to be able to do. In fact, there are many things that we had planned to do that we are not able to do now. And we hope that we will be able to do those if we maintain our fiscal responsibility going forward. That will position us to be able to do those things much more ably than if we went into a deficit spin. So I think that we are doing the right things in order to make our way toward those goals, but they are not goals that we unfortunately will not be able to meet those this year. So I look forward to hearing the creative solutions that will come forward to us in the months to come. I look forward to participating in that discussion, but I also, look forward to hearing the active dialogue that can occur in our community.
Anyone else? Councilmember Stock?
Yes, thank you for giving us definitely some options and food for thought. And I do agree with Mr. Dunn about thinking about when we make cuts, who gets impacted by them the most. If we cut, I know one example, and this is just an example that someone said once upon a time, you know, if we cut yard waste pickup, I can afford to pay somebody to take my yard waste. Somebody else maybe can't. And as we talk about neighborhood quality and we talk about drainage or we talk about, you know, things like that, yard waste pickup actually matters in some neighborhoods in terms of flooding. So, I mean, those kinds of things, I think we'll just, as we get closer, I think we'll have to keep in mind. I am troubled with the buyout program with police and fire in that I just, from an equity standpoint, but also from a realistic standpoint, that to me, either all police is in or all police isn't in. I don't care which. I totally understand why they're not in. But I just sort of feel like that all sworn officers or all sworn firefighters should be in the program or not in the program. And I think when you say, well, you this half does and this half doesn't, I think it just kind of creates some problems and inequities that I just don't really think are fair. I would like us, as we move forward, to, you know, obviously look at those cuts, and we are definitely going to have things that we're not going to be able to pay for that we have paid for in the past. So I think that we definitely need to all be cognizant of that as a community, but also as a council. I think as we get closer, we need to be real cognizant of who those cuts impact and what that looks like in our neighborhoods. Thank you.
Councilmember Kiles.
I think this is definitely something, as we talked about earlier, yes, I'm going to be supporting this as we move forward. Their ideas, obviously, we've been through some of this ourselves with the VSIP program. The only thing that I would, to be honest with you, I would caution and have us think about is just through my own experience, we did go through cuts and we did, go through a lot of pain. And, you know, just a few years ago, things don't stop happening just because we make cuts. And we can say all day that we'll just tell people no. But the reality is just telling people, no, we can't do this right now may not be the best. Not only is it the best solution, I just haven't seen it work, just to be honest. We are going to have to look at how we reduce violence. We are going to have to look at how we increase equity and economic development. Those will be important issues and things that we have amongst a number of city things, city priorities. So, as Councilmember Beck said, we're definitely interested in listening to public feedback on what's critical and important. The one thing that I do know is that these issues don't go away even just because you reduce services or staff. In fact, what I remember was a time where staff was very burdened and morale was hit very hard through these cuts. We live in times where I don't think that people realize that if one issue happens in our community, just one issue, how much staff time that takes. Just one small little issue. It could just be one little issue. And so, for me, I take these things as well as you all, so I don't want to infer that you don't. But just personally, looking at all options, I've never talked about reserves. I've asked a little bit about them, but I'm not suggesting that we should spend all of our reserves. However, I am thinking that we do need to look at some of these issues and know that no matter what budget strategy we use, these issues will not go away, and it will be incumbent upon us to figure out how to to sometimes, in some cases, just react to what's going on in our environment. So thank you.
Councilmember Gladney.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't want to belabor the point that others have made already. I just will say that I am supportive of going forward with this, but I hate saying that. It's just a reminder that pretty much every corner of this community, let alone the country and the world, has been impacted by this pandemic and its aftershocks that we're still feeling and will continue to feel. And, you know, people's lives have been jeopardized and lost. People's livelihoods are being lost. It's just a sad situation all around. So while I can say that I think we're making the right decisions tonight, I have utterly no pleasure or confidence in saying that, because I think it's just a really terrible right thing to be doing. The only thing that actually, if there's any kind of silver lining to this, is that so far in this conversation, we haven't heard this phrase that I often hear when this kind of thing comes up, which is, well, you know, just got to do more with less. I hate that phrase, because you don't really do more with less. You end up usually doing less with less. And that's what we're talking about tonight. Again, I hate that we're talking about it, but we're talking about reductions in services. And I feel that's a realistic outlook. There are, when we lose people, and I think everyone at the city does has a vital role in making the city work. When we lose our people, we lose the ability to perform some of these services, or at least perform them up to the standard that our citizens have been used to. So, I don't know. At least we're being honest about that, I guess. So anyway, I'll be supportive of this tonight. But I wish we weren't even in this position. I mean, not only at the city, but everywhere. Thank you.
Councilmember Bricks.
I don't really have too much more to add. I kind of, along with Councilmember Gladney, it is crazy how quickly things have changed. It feels like we were headed in one direction overnight, and then overnight this happens, and then it's been crazy how quickly things have changed and how it's impacted our economy. And so I will be supporting this as well. I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's the responsible and the fiscally responsible thing to do. And I would rather take a more proactive approach and try to address this head on than just wait and see what happens and then react. So I appreciate the approach that's being taken. Maybe this is an opportunity for creative ideas and solutions, and I definitely think too that hearing from the public about what you value in terms of city services is important for us to hear right now as well. So thank you to the efforts of the finance department and HR and everybody who's been working on this. And we'll appreciate the efforts of city staff moving forward to give us different options so that we can do the best job possible moving forward. Thanks.
Anyone else? I agree with the comments. I think, one of the things that helped us during the 2007 recession was that as a city, we reacted quickly. We made some incredibly hard choices, but what we didn't do was wait to a point where we were pushing off decisions on a future council. We set ourselves up so when the recovery began, we were in a place to benefit from that, as opposed to still paying off debt or, having structural deficits relating to that. And so I see that again as really our duty. We need to make these hard choices now so that as recovery begins to happen again, the city is in a position to take advantage of that and, you know, ready to grow. And so we've got a lot of hard work in front of us. This is a beginning to that work. You know, with respect to reserves, there will be things that come up over the course of the next year that we couldn't have anticipated today. And we are going to need some reserves available for those inevitable events. This year has certainly taught us that we can't plan for everything. And we need to have some flexibility within our budget. However, and I feel like I can't leave tonight without saying this, for me, even though it is an increased expenditure, I feel like we absolutely have to work on the child and family program that we talked about with the school district. As we see violence continuing to grow in our community rather than to abate, we have got to do something to get at the systemic problems. And I think we ignore these issues to our detriment. We end up spending more money on the other end. And that, for me, is something that I am willing to spend money on, even though it means an increase in expenditure. And maybe it's one-time money out of that fund balance. Maybe our fund balance doesn't meet the exact percentage we have laid out. Maybe we allow it to dip a little bit below the city standards for this 1 year so that we can start making a difference here on the violence issues and the social needs within our community. So for me, that's something I'd like staff to continue to look at. So our alternative tonight is to direct staff to proceed with the recommended next steps to develop the proposed budget balancing measures for future council consideration, and to direct staff to bring forward an ordinance establishing the VSIP program. So, Councilmember Pianfetti?
Yes.
Bruno?
Yes.
Beck?
Yes.
Bricks?
Yes.
Stock? Stock's frozen. Gladney?
Yes.
Kyles?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Greg, are you there? I can't hear him. Can anybody else? Okay, you do have direction. We are now at the point in our meeting for, Greg, are you back? Nope. For council comments, are there any council comments on any issue? Oops, sorry, first audience participation.
I see no
general audience participation.
Now they go. Brian Dunn.
Hey, my name's Brian Dunn. I live in Champaign. I just want to say that right now, Urbana is having a report on their investigation into the Aaliyah Lewis case. And, you know, not surprisingly, everything that the police did was by policy, by regulation. And I think that's just further example that police as they exist today need to be abolished. We need to start moving towards alternatives. Punishing our civilians into compliance has never worked in our entire history. We see violence growing in this community. You know, we're closing things like the Roundhouse and we are not investing in our kids. And then unsurprisingly, we have these kinds of issues. So I think that we need to get serious about addressing violence through helping our community, not through incarcerating it. Thank you.
Ellen Axelrod.
Alan Axelrod, City of Urbana. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So forgive me, I don't have very organized notes because things are moving quickly. I am the campaign lead for an organization called No Ameren Shutoffs Campaign. We are now 26 organizations strong, spanning from Central Illinois all the way down to Carbondale. We have twice now advocated for and successfully won utility shutoff moratoria extensions. However, I want to point to a particularly egregious aspect, and I'm saying this not to boast or anything like that, or to do a public appeal to the public at large, but you all have been talking about the stress on the budgetary situation of the city of Champaign, and I want to outline how on September 11th, of all dates, things are about to get a lot worse. From a utility disconnect notice that Ameren Illinois sent out that I had been forwarded, a person who had put $1,500 into their utility bills still has another $900 and change owed. If they have their disconnects occur, this is going to cause issues when it comes to access to education, and it could result in federal lawsuits, as the Decatur public school system was subject to federal lawsuits when they canceled only a subsection of school programs in response to a teacher's assistance strike. But the same effect and the same legal structure applies. But the other thing is, more importantly, the thing that city governments like yours relies on is the 20%+ of the revenue that's usually expected from sales and use tax. This is what is hurting people and hurting the city of Champaign right now, is that people are so desperate in trying to pay off their utility bills that they are not spending money in the city of Champaign as a whole. I want to run some numbers by you, because we don't have numbers from Ameren Illinois, but NICOR is another utility company in Illinois. They have disclosed that 152,000 households have past due balances of more than 60 days. Springfield's utility municipal supplier stated that they have over 11,000 people who are past due. This is a widespread issue, and Illinois American Water is set to turn off water sometime in September. We haven't gotten clarification on exactly when. So we need members of the city council to consider both drafting ordinances to address this issue, a resolution potentially to address this issue, but also advocacy. Advocacy to the governor. The mayor of Urbana has already done this. She even posted publicly on Facebook in August when she did it. They're already starting to draft ordinances on this, so that they can try to do something about that. They are planning to draft a resolution soon. We need the city of Champaign to do this too, because if it just happens in Urbana, if shutoffs only happen in Champaign, that's going to make things more dangerous in Urbana. We have to protect each other, even if the state won't protect us. Thank you.
Bo Barber at 8:22 p.m.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Bo Barber. I'm from Ogden, Illinois. And I wanted to kind of just reiterate what Alan Axelrod had said with the upcoming shutoffs on September 11th. I'll just come out with it. That day's my birthday. And ever since that day happened when I was about 7 years old, basically I live with the fact that, you know, several thousand people died on my birthday. I don't like to celebrate my birthday anymore. That's not the point of this, though. The fact is that people always talk about, you know, never forget. Never forget the 3,000 people that died. Never forget that the firefighters sacrificed their lives to try and save several people. And, you know, it would fly in the face of everything that we stand for to try and let this happen. And, you know, I only know there's so much that Champaign City Council can do compared to the state level. But whatever you can do, something has to be done, because, you know, in the best case, people's lives will be ruined and people's quality of life will significantly decrease. That's the best case scenario if shutoffs start to happen. In the worst and most likely case scenario, people will die, whether in the short term or in a few months from now, people will die if these shutoffs are allowed to occur. And so I encourage you to do something about that. And that's all I'd have to say for my public comment, because I just want to keep it to that. And please, please consider this, because if nothing's done, people will die, and several people, you know, it would have started on September 11th. And if that's, not just injustice. I don't know what is. Also, the one thing I wanted to point out, you know, free speech and all that, but I heard Mayor Finan that you had attended the Blue Lives Matter rally or the Back the Blue rally or whatever it is. And do you have any kind of comment on that? I'm just sincerely asking because, that was a group that reportedly has talked about hosing people down that didn't support cops, you know, and that's mainly black and people of color and minorities that they're talking about here. And that's some 1960s stuff. And
Mr. Barber, the rules of our council meeting is this is your opportunity to make a statement. It's not a question and answer period.
Okay. No, I just kind of want to put that out there, but that's all I'd have to say. So thank you.
Justin Michael at 8:25 p.m.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Justin Hendricks, Champaign resident, Parkland student, creator of Homo is the New Homeboy. Back from vacation, Deb, how was the rally for Black Lives Ultimate Extinction? Or would you like to call it Back the Blue, right? Did anyone else attend the Anti-Black Lives Matter March that wants to give in their input? Still waiting on it. Was it political gain or pleasure? I really would like to know. As the people's mayor, I need answers. I have been threatened to blackmail for these Back the Blue lives, and I'm done with it. Unit 4, white silence is violence, and so are the indifference of knowing Black Lives Matter by windows to t-shirts. Black Lives Matter by reports when declaring racism is a public health crisis, but not when sending out messages seeing the cease to Black exploitation and liberation. Shame on you. Westview to Carrie Busey to Bottenfield and more, Unit 4. I ask you all as a city council to seek answers and truths. One, please, from all the districts and truth, as I refuse to have teachers who don't believe in Black lives that matter, but then want to stand and say all lives matter. No, let's make it clear. Black lives matter at all times. Immigrants, Latins, indigenous people, LGBTQ people, all lives matter. But also let it be known Black lives matter, and it needs to be known everywhere, from the schools to the church halls, from the streets to the community centers. Black lives matter. I've been waiting to meet with the police, the U of I athletics, and other establishments to chase the clout for Black Lives That Matter, but yet aren't doing the civic engagement. I don't have a table to come to when I'm being called, but I have a chair to come to everyone that you sit at. So I want to know when we start talking. Also, if we're looking at a budget cut, let's start with the U of I, let's start with Julia Reitz, Malicious Mary, the News Gazette, and everybody that has benefited from Black and brown bodies in this community for years. Give me the loot from my Black and brown communities for the longevity and their livelihoods. Cancel the rent, stop the shutoffs, as most of these will be affected in the Black and brown communities. Black churches and organizations, step up. Wannabe saviors, step down and wipe the debt with your privilege. Melissa's Mary and the News Gazette, I'm still waiting on my replies. I'm still waiting by tweet, Zoom, email, or handwritten note. Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's all we have this evening, Madam Mayor.
Any council comment? Seeing none, City Manager, I may be misremembering this, but I think we may have gotten an email from Ameren about a fund that is available for people who may be facing cutoff, and I was trying to find it during our speaker and couldn't track that down.
Mayor, I don't have the most current information on that, but we can look into that so that we can announce it at next week's meeting.
Thank you. It may have been from Illinois American Water. I may have them confused, but that'd be great. We need a motion to adjourn.
Madam Mayor, I move that we adjourn as long as I'm not frozen right now.
You are not.
Second.
Will the clerk please call the roll?
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Bricks?
Yes.
Bruno?
Yes.
Gladney?
Yes.
Kyles?
Yes.
Pianfetti?
Yes.
Stock?
Yes.
Mayor Finan?
Yes. We are adjourned. See you next week.